Welcome to Season 2 of the Excel Podcast. Join your host, Kevin Selwood, as he talks to a variety of people with useful and interesting things to say about all things to do with instructing and driver training. Throughout the series, there will be a mixture of local personalities from the driver training industry in the Exeter and Torbay areas, as well as nationally acclaimed trainers. Episodes include informative discussions regarding all aspects of running your business, as well as opportunities to find out a bit more about each interviewee. We hope you enjoy the show.
Well, hello, everybody, and thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of the Excel podcast. And I'm very pleased, delighted, privileged, whatever word you want to use, to have tonight's guest with me. Various descriptions have been made of her, from a rather derogatory the witch through to the happy tappy woman, and that description probably for a lot of you will immediately tell you that I have with me today Diane Hall. So Diane, thank you so much for giving up some time for coming and joining me today.
Oh, lovely. I'm looking forward to it. And the witch comment, I believe, was from Chris Benstead going back very, very many years when I was muddling up lefts and rights. And then I posted this 10-second technique one day, and one instructor called it the tappy hand dance. And then I became the tappy hand dance lady, the clappy dance, the happy dance. So, yeah, that's it. 20 years in ADI, 14 years a therapist, more like happy hand dance lady or the witch.
Now, we are actually recording this on May Day this year. And the main reason for doing this is that you are coming down to the Southwest later on this year. So we are actually just waiting for one of my ADI colleagues, Penny, who is arranging the course in Exeter, to actually give me the go-ahead to put this out on the airwaves. And as soon as she does, we'll do that. So, you know, we are specifically promoting the fact that you're coming down to Exeter and then going on to Cornwall. But with the nature of things, we're not going to stay that parochial. We'll allow anybody to come and listen to it, won't we?
We certainly will do. We're from Inverness, which is where we are in August, and Glasgow, all the way down to, is it Falmouth? No, Truro? Falmouth, I believe, in, Falmouth and Exeter in October. So travelling the country.
Yeah, and very well received everywhere you go.
Thank you.
Right, let's just start. I know I've listened to you on other podcasts, and probably everybody gets to do this, but one thing that has struck me when doing these is, even though a lot of us know you and other people who are sort of what you can call nationally recognised figures, there are still a lot of people who don't know you. I was quite surprised, for example, when I interviewed Bob Morton back in early March, that there are a number of people who didn't know him.
I suppose
If you're new to the industry, I suppose you and nobody's mentioned these people to you, then why would you know any of them? And even some experienced ADIs didn't realise the wealth of information that Bob has out on the internet. So, you know, there will be people to whom you will be a new face and a new name, not for very long. We'll sort that out. So it's nice just to get sort of a timeline of how you've got to where you are now.
Okay. Oh gosh, that could be a long one. I am old, you know. So
not as old as me.
I'll be 59 this year, so played catch up. Can I just say, Bob? Excuse me, coughing at you, Bob. Absolutely wonderful guy. And if you haven't listened to Bob or seen any of his stuff, please do, because he's an absolute wealth of information. Yeah. And even if he was spouting rubbish, which he doesn't, I could just sit and listen to his accent all day. It's so soothing. But Bob, absolutely wonderful. I'm used to be a pharmaceutical sales rep, so I have got a medical background, so a lot of the stuff that we talk about around nerves and anxiety and how the brain works, that's coming from my previous career. But I trained as an ADI back in November 02. I went on a pink badge, having trained with a wonderful Helen Vary at Shore Pass, who put the fear of God into me at the time. But she's absolutely awesome. She's a wonderful lady. So yeah, I went on a pink badge, qualified in January 03. So basically been an ADI for 20 years. Yeah. Going back to, I've been an ADI, I think, 3 or 4 years when I started to realise the number of learners that were capable drivers, but then they'd fail and they'd come back with a serious fault, having done something that they would never do in the car. You know, they'd miss somebody on a crossing or not notice a traffic light change or try to turn left from the right-hand lane of a roundabout. And naive as I was, I just assumed 20 years ago that you taught them to drive and then they did the same on test as they did on lesson. How wrong was that? So it started leading me to think there's got to be another way. And if anybody's old enough to remember Paul McKenna, he wrote all these books, I can make you thin, I can make you rich, I can make you confident. And I'd seen him doing his weird and wonderful techniques on this golfer who was suffering from the yips, which is where they kept jerking with the club hand. And they just couldn't control the shakes. And I thought, well, that's just like a learner's left leg on the clutch when it jerks. Yeah, yeah. They're uncontrollably shaking and they keep stalling. So I started to explore it, and cutting an extremely long story short, I qualified as a therapist in some of the techniques that Paul McKenna used. And they're the same ones as used on the troops returning from Afghanistan with PTSD, and incredibly effective. Wrote the very first book, which is Elevate to Pass, which is still, I believe, on Amazon and no doubt propping coffee tables up around the UK. And it kind of went from there. So that was the potted history. Then over the years, and then I met Chris in 2016. Chris, my partner, who people get to see on the workshop, he's a psychotherapist, used to be with CAMHS, which is Children's and Adolescents Mental Health Services. So he's first and foremost a child and adult psychotherapist. We then got together 2017. He trained with me as a driving instructor to kind of see what the job's like, to see what the issues were. So when we present our workshops from both sides, he is an ADI for 20 years, trained as a therapist, but then Chris, who's first and foremost a psychotherapist. Sorry, I hope that wasn't too long. It could be very long.
No, that's fine. And one thing that I'll just mention now is that you have very, very kindly volunteered, Chris, to do a separate podcast with me at some point, covering the sort of mental health issues.
Absolutely. Chris's story, I won't give too much away, but Chris's story from a health and mental perspective is, oh gosh, he's just been on the most incredible journey. And everybody coming to the workshop will understand why Chris, A, is so passionate about what he does, and B, why he and how he is such an incredible therapist and how much he can help people. But I'll save that for another day.
I was there in Taunton last year for it, and it was quite powerful what he was saying, as much as the things that you bring into the course.
We've been together 7 years, Kevin, and I still cry when I hear Chris's story, for what this brings me to tears now thinking about it, what this wonderful, kind, generous, loving, intelligent guy has gone through in his life and what he is now. And it's just the most amazing story to listen to. And Chris shares a little bit of it in the workshop. It's not a sob story, it's a happy story. Well, in terms of what he's gone through and where he is now, if there's anybody in this planet that can help people with any mental health issues, it's Chris.
Yeah, Yeah, yes, I shall look forward to doing that at some point in the future. So from all of this and realizing there was a need for something a little bit different than maybe stuffing your face with bananas before
rescue
a test.
Rescue remedy,
downing pints of rescue remedy. The workshops sort of developed from all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we joke about the bananas and rescue remedy, but we jokingly say that, you know, most of the learner posts on Facebook about nerves, they will have the answer, eat a banana and have some rescue remedy. And it's sad to see instructors are saying the same. Get yourself some beta blockers or a paracetamol, or just do more mock tests. None of that is going to work. I'm sorry, that's like saying to somebody with an axe in the head, well, take an aspirin, it might get better. You know,
your voice, you're disappearing with the volumes going.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of reverberation there. Are we back there okay?
Yep.
That's okay. I'm getting reverberation my side, but hopefully it's not too bad at yours. So there really, really is a need. Something we talk about, you know, for those people who've been in ADI for a long time, you and me included, we were taught the original fault identification, analysis, and rectification. So simplistically, a pupil stalls, there you go, you've identified it. Oh, they're in third gear, you've analysed it, you tell them to stick it in first, you've rectified it. Now we know it's a lot more complex than that, but that's the fundamentals. And we do that now, albeit in a much more coaching and client-centered way, and helping the client to work out that they're in third gear rather than first and what they can do about it. But we've never really done it for emotions and behaviours and physical sensations and the thoughts that clients have. So why not look at identifying all of these? Why not analyse why it's happening, and why not rectify it with techniques? And that's the whole idea and concept behind the workshops.
Yeah, I remember when I started out, it was very much a mantra that we sort of went through, that what you did there was, this happened because the consequences could be, so next time, do this, that or the other, and you know, just get on with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long you've been in ADI, but do I ask?
2007.
All right, okay, so just a couple of years after me then. So I've done it for 20 years and I can still quote you the PSTs. And if there's any oldies amongst us, so you're all nodding, any new ones, new ADIs or PDIs listening to this, they go, what are PSTs? And we just used to sit there quoting. So the objective of today's lesson is to learn the turn in the road. The strategies you will use will be peep and creep, such as you've used at junctions, and slow clutch control, by the end of which you'll be able to do it with little or no help from me.
And and whether you want to do this or not, you're going to.
It's entirely irrelevant. So teaching has moved on, Kevin, has it? It's phenomenally, but the emotional side hasn't. There's very little training within the 40 hours of teaching PDIs. On the workshops, we talk about best behaviour, behaviours, emotions, physical sensations and thoughts. So am I okay just to explore that a little?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. So when somebody goes into panic or has anxiety or nerves or fear over something, or we call it the panic cycle, the first thing is the event. So that could be the driving test, the part 2, 3 or standards check, or it could just be a busy roundabout with a car close behind, or a learner doing moving off and stopping for the first time. So you've got the event. The first thing they will have is an emotion. Now, it might be joy, happiness and excitement. Wow, that's great. But it could be fear, dread, nerves, worry, overwhelm, panic, terror in some cases. So you have the emotion. You then have a thought that goes with it. I don't like this. I can't do it. I know I'm going to fail. Everybody's watching me. Everybody knows the examiner wants to fail people. I feel intimidated. And those emotions and thoughts build upon one another. That produces the stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline, that sends people into the fight, flight or freeze. You then get the physical sensations, so the pounding chest, the sweaty palms, the breath that goes like that. And I've just realised that this is not video, so anybody just I can't speak. So some of the physical sensations instructors will see, sometimes they won't. So as an instructor, you might not be aware of the person's emotions. You might not be aware of their thoughts. Mm. You might not see the physical sensations. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to spot the hands clutching the steering wheel, the sweat dropping off them, and, you know, the left leg jumping up and down on the clutch. But you don't see some of the other physical sensations that they're experiencing. All you might see is the behaviour. And then you turn around and say, did you not notice that speed limit sign? The light's going to red. Why haven't you seen it? There's somebody standing by the crossing. And all you're seeing is the behaviour. All you're seeing is the outcome. So we call this best behaviours, emotions, physical sensations and thoughts. That's just a lovely acronym to remember it by.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of the workshop and Mental Health Pro and Driving Test Nurse Pro is helping instructors to be able to identify all of this, analyze it, and then rectify it. Sorry, that's quite a lengthy answer.
No. While you were doing that, going through that, I was thinking of two specific situations that I've had, one of them very recently. But the first one was probably 2 years ago, before I was aware of what you can offer. So I feel I ought to slap my wrist at this point for not being aware. But it was a girl who, she was 27, 28. In fact, she's one of the girls on one of my previous podcasts, who had a go at 17. But gave up and then didn't do it again. And the main reason was because she had been in a bad car crash at the age of 10 and really didn't want to. And first lesson, and I knew all of this, you know, she was very open about it. Said she really wasn't looking forward to it. And the first lesson, now I did describe this in the previous podcast and then corrected myself. I did describe it as heavy breathing. I thought, no, that's not right. it was very deep on her very first lesson. Now I managed to coax her onto a very quiet road. It was a national speed limit road, but it's a quiet one. There's no traffic on it. And she just about got to 20 mile an hour. And there was this very, very deep breathing. She was really struggling to keep hold of her emotions. And I thought, you know, when I came to the course last year, I thought I could have done with this.
Yes.
and then I had another one 2 weeks ago, which took me totally by surprise. A mock test with a lad who's got his test this week. And I'm giving him instruction at the roundabout, turn right, second exit. And we're staying in the left lane. And we're staying in the left lane. And I said, we are turning right at the next roundabout. You're going to need the right-hand lane. No, we stayed in the left. And I thought, there's something going on here. She's never done this before. And we pulled over somewhere a little while afterwards, and he just came out with this, oh, I always panic in tests.
Mm.
Oh, thanks. and we talked about school exams, and he said, I panic in them as well, but I can get away with scraping an E there.
Yes.
I can't really get away with it here, can I?
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking, oh golly, what do I do? Well, what we've actually done with him is that Christy, my business partner, we changed the scenario. And I know Mick Knowles talked about this with somebody he took to a test several times in Hull and then took them to a different test center. Mm. And they passed. So we just changed the scenario. Christy took him out and he was absolutely fine. Yeah. and he's driven, you know, so although the strategies would really have been quite useful, I think, the short-term one with the lad coming up this week, we didn't really have much time, but I would have loved to have used some of your techniques with Abby, because I think we would have accelerated her learning more than we actually did.
Yeah, absolutely. Am I okay picking up for a few minutes on both of those?
Yes, please.
Okay. So with Abby, when we do the workshop, both Chris and I are obviously qualified in what we do as ADIs, but as a therapist and a psychotherapist. So there's a fine line, isn't there, between doing the job of as a driving instructor and that of a therapist. And when we do the workshop, Kevin, you were there, you've seen it. Hands up anybody who feels more like a therapist or counsellor than an instructor, and every hand in the room goes up, because if it didn't, people wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
There's a fine line. So if anybody does take any pupils on who, like Abby, have been involved in previous accidents or anything like that, just be aware of your role as a therapist. As an ADI, not a therapist, but please feel free to put them in touch with us, because the therapy that I do is incredibly effective at getting rid of past traumas. So we can definitely help there. With regards to this young lad, he is experiencing something called anticipatory anxiety, the fear of the fear. If you notice, you know, we said the event turning right at this roundabout, you know, I talked about best behavior. So what you're seeing then is you're not seeing his emotion, but there's anxiety.
Yeah.
The thoughts to himself are, I always fail at tests. I can scrape a knee, but that's it. The anxiety rises up. I'm dreadful at exams at school. The test is exactly the same. So what you're not seeing there, Kev, is the anxiety and the thoughts and the language that he's creating. You may or may not see some physical sensations. So the emotions, the sensations and the thoughts may not be evident to you, even as an experienced instructor. But what you are seeing is the outcome. You're seeing behavior. So his brain is flooded with cortisol. So the adrenaline hormone is the fight and the flight.
Yeah.
Rush the roundabout. They don't see the car. They dash out. They just need to get out of there. The cortisol is the shutdown. They can't process. It's a freeze hormone. They can't hear what you're saying. He's got auditory exclusion. You're saying at the roundabout, turn right, second exit. You're going to need the right-hand lane here. This is the right-hand lane. We're turning right. Absolutely nothing. You could be speaking double Dutch to him.
Yeah, yes.
He just can't process it because they've just got auditory exclusion. They shut down. There's the brain fog. So all you're seeing is the behavior. Now, luckily, because you've been on our course and you've explored all this, you're able to sit down with him and talk about it.
Yeah.
If you notice, you've already, going back to this identification, you've identified it. You've identified there's an issue. The issue is this stupid bloody learner's trying to turn right from the left-hand lane. What's the daft bugger doing? Could be an easy interpretation.
Yeah.
Lots of instructors, you only need to go on to the funny side of some of the groups. Bleep, bleep, blooming snowflake today. Doesn't listen to a bleep, bleep word I'm saying. Why do they always try and turn left, right from the left-hand lane? Well, you've identified it. That's great. But what you're now starting to is analyze it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So exams at school were a nightmare for him. His emotional part of his brain is saying this test is worse than the exams at school. I've always been useless there, so I'm going to be useless at that. So you're now analysing what's happening. The next bit is to rectify it.
Yeah.
Isn't it great the way that you did it and chatted to him and you've identified it, you've analysed with him why it's happening, then you've got the strategies in place to put it right for him.
Yeah, it's very much being done in a very short space of time.
Yes.
But we've just changed the dynamics in the car, for one thing. What the dynamics will be like when the test comes, we'll find out later by the end of this week. He just seemed so much calmer when he did this next one with Christy. But which sort of quite nicely leads us on, I suppose, to really about, without wanting to give too much away, what can people expect to get from the course, and you know, what are some of these techniques which are sort of freely available on the internet if people want to go and search your name, but things like the tapping, for example. What's the sort of rationale for that? Does anyone know?
Well, that's a good question. You know, my joking thing is, you know, when people say to me, oh, how does TFT, tapping or thought field therapy work? My stock two answers are, very well, thank you. What's your next question? Or how does it work? If I told you, I'd have to kill you. Do you know what? It is so incredibly, incredibly effective that it is quicker to do the technique than it is to explain how it works. Yeah. Yeah. In our driving test nerves pro, we call it the 2 minute techniques. And when instructors sign up to driving test nerves pro, this is the online resource that they can sign up to every month. It's only $9.95, so what, cup of coffee a week, and they can give it to up to 30 of their students at any one time. Yeah. And there is a more detailed explanation in there. I'm happy to give a bit of an explanation, but I guarantee that people will come away even more skeptical after I've explained it. But you need to see it in action to see how incredibly successful it is. It's incredible. It was, as I've said, it's a treatment of choice for the soldiers returning from Afghanistan with PTSD. It was used, if anybody's old enough to remember, on the survivors of both the Rwandan genocide and also Hurricane Katrina. You saw it demonstrated whenever we're at the workshops. We get in the afternoon after lunch, I get somebody up to the front, and any volunteers who've got any fears, phobias, anxieties, something that stresses them or intimidates them, and we pretty much, if not totally cure the fear, bring it down from like a 10 out of 10 down to a 2 or 3 out of 10 within, what, 2-3 minutes?
Yeah, that was quite dramatic, the demonstration he did when I saw it at Taunton. Yeah. Something went through my mind just then and it's gone straight out of it again. I can't for the life of me remember what I was going to say. you might have to ad lib for a minute.
Well, in that case, I will ad lib for a moment whilst you're thinking about something to say and tell you that I'm not trying to get out of an explanation of thought field therapy. It is incredibly effective, but it's easier to see the techniques being done than it is to give an explanation of how it works. The other technique, the ABC, is something that Chris, you'll see it banded around the internet on the Facebook groups, or speak to Diane about the ABC. And we share that in the workshop. It's just a simple, simple technique that's got an incredible amount of science behind it that can change people's emotions in a minute. Am I still ad-libbing?
I thought the sound had gone again. No, that's fine. I remember now what it was I was going to say. It's all to do with it.
Because
one of my PDIs lives in Honiton, about 3 or 4 miles from me. We did a very, very early part three session last week, just the two of us in the car, just getting her to do timing of directions and getting all the at the right time and getting the right words in. Vicky, bless her, gets in the car and says, well, doesn't matter where you go, I know Honiton really well. So we're going up this road and I'm just saying to her things like next left or straight on at the roundabout, and I want her to put the correct terminology in.
So we're
going up this road and I'm saying second left. I'd like you to take the second road on the right. And I said to Vicky, there aren't any roads on the right. I thought you knew Honiton.
Ah, well, that's the psychological reversal. So this is a tappy hand dance. Yeah. So that's what we're famous for, isn't it? The tappy hand dance.
That's what I've threatened her with, that we're going to be in car at next session. If she comes out with that, we're going to be doing it.
It's funny, isn't it? This 10-second technique, you know, and we are asked for it so thousands and thousands of times. And it literally is a 10-second technique that stops people's muddling up lefts and rights. And it sounds so simple, but the number of learners, especially if they're dyslexic, dyspraxic, ADHD, or struggle with English and they're muddled up with lefts and rights, even that in itself can be a stressor. And I know you can have stickers or watch on one hand, bracelet on the other, or you can have, you know, you can point one way or the other, but you have to keep doing it. Use this technique and it works really well.
Yes, I had one girl many years ago who struggled with all of this. And this is pointless me actually doing this because we can see each other, but nobody else can.
Yeah,
but what she said she was going to do on her test was that she was going to put an L on this hand. I've just raised up my right hand.
The right hand.
And an R on her left hand. I said to Holly, I'm not sure that's going to work.
They do have L and R. I mean, I'm a member of the Funny Side group, and it's really hilarious. You know, you'll frequently see pictures of people wearing gloves with left and right. Yeah. I think David Savage or one of the people on there put a post up once, and the pupil had painted L on one hand and right on the other hand on the nails and still got the wrong way round.
Well,
people make, I'm doing it now, make an L shape with a hand. But the problem is, if somebody's dyslexic, the L could be inverted.
Yes. Yeah.
They could do a backwards L with the right hand. So, you know, loads of confusion. And for saying it's such a simple thing to do, every instructor ought to try this technique just to help their pupils.
Yeah.
In fact, if you want, I'll give you the link to it because I've got a video for that.
Yeah.
So if I give you a link, we can stick that in the podcast if instructors
would
like.
Absolutely, because there's a set of notes go with it. So certainly links to whatever can go on there. Yeah. One thing that I want, that I have been sort of doing with this second series, I delude myself that we're on series two back by popular demand.
Why not?
But what one thing I was doing, or I have a theme through quite a bit of the stuff, is standards check and part three techniques, help and so on. So obviously a lot of what the course does is focused on learners, but how about ADIs and PDIs as well coming up for standards check or part three, especially when you get them frustratingly coming when they're going for the last chance?
Yes. Yeah. We get instructors get in touch with us. Many people know Lou Walsh, and although I'm not on Lou's groups, because obviously I'm an ADI, from her PDI group, Laura on there, lots of people will recommend her PDIs over to me, or even people who are on the last attempt at the part threes or their standards checks. So you can imagine the emotional turmoil that they're in at this point. You've got somebody who spent a few £1,000 on their training, they might have given up their job, they might have signed up to a franchise in a car or bought their own, or you've got an ADI who's done the job for years and just for whatever reason isn't getting through the standards check. Now, obviously, there's systems in place, and Chris does a session to help instructors who feel that their teaching isn't at the level. But what I do is I specialise in those people who are on this kind of second or third attempt, or nerves take over. So there's various levels of this. We can help people during the workshop because all the resources will help with that.
Yeah.
I will also do a one-to-one session with people on Zoom. Now, you did ask me earlier when you emailed and said it would be nice to hear about a couple of last chance people who are on the part three. I've just gone onto our website. It's quite funny, on the workshop, there's 30-odd reviews on there. On the one-to-one sessions, there's only about 8 or 9 reviews. And I think people are quite reticent about happy to do a review about the workshop. I think sometimes people are reticent about putting a review on when they've had a one-to-one session because they almost feel that they shouldn't need it, or they should get it recommended together. But did you want to hear a couple of them?
Yes, please.
So people can find this on the website anyway, but this is from a lovely lady called Nicola. After failing my part three a couple of times with nerves and anxiety, I reached out to Diane after a recommendation from the Barbara's controller. And there's lots of reverberation and feedback. Is it okay your end?
Yeah, that went sort of a bit pear-shaped for a moment, but then you do come back, land back on the planet.
Oh, that's okay. So it says, this has proved to be one of the best decisions I've made throughout my adult life. Our one-to-one session totally blew me away. During the session, Diane taught me various techniques, including thought-filled therapy and the ABC to help combat my nerves, anxiety, and fear of failing. For many years, I've had a fear of exams and not pushing myself, especially in work settings. This has held me back in many situations throughout my life. I cannot believe how this has helped me in so many ways. This therapy works. I've proved it last week. I passed my part three. That was a final attempt. Thank you, Diane, from the bottom of my heart. And then, oh my gosh, there's lots of them. I don't want to sit here reading them all. I'll be here forever. But yeah, lots of reviews on there about doing a one-to-one session or on the workshops. You know, I've been doing this 14 years, you know, 15 years now, and we know that it works. Yeah. It's incredible.
If it didn't work, you wouldn't be in business now.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And anxiety is on the increase. So if anything, we actually stopped teaching learners in 2020, and we're busier now with the workshops and the therapy and the one-to-one sessions than we've ever been.
Yeah, and there's no sign, I don't think, of it decreasing. Test waiting times have actually gone up. They were about 4 months here in Exeter. They've gone up to 5 months. You know, it's well into October now before you get anything at all, unless you're on Testy or one of these other cancellation places. But you know, for the majority of people, it's a 5 month wait, together with everything else that they've been through, with the loss of GCSEs, A levels, and so on. You know, the way everything went during the pandemic, you know, it's just that anxiety is going up and up. Cost of living. No, some of these people who were 17 or 18 3 years ago are now in their early 20s and starting out on life. And are they ever going to be able to afford a home? Are they even going to get a job? This is a bit doom and gloom now, but nothing's happening to improve the situation.
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, well, when we do the workshop, we talk about World Health Organization figures, and we're not going to sit there putting loads of stats up. Yeah. It's just one that we put up, and that was going back 20 odd years. Anxiety amongst teenagers was running at 7.9%. Then when Ant and Dec did this Britain Get Talking campaign with Britain's Got Talent back in 2018, females aged 17 to 19, emotional disorders up to 23.4%. Now the World Health Organization say that drugs such as SSRIs, such as your Prozacs and Suroxats and all of these, they're at an all-time high, and anxiety is on the increase. 50% of the world's population has got some psychological disorder, and we're teaching these learners. Yeah. We might be that ourselves. And you know, when a learner gets in the car age 17, you are probably the first person that they are doing something with alone, as it were, on their own, without parent support. They might not have gone through exams. So you've got the anxiety, the social anxiety. I did a quick video the other day that we put on Facebook. Chris was doing some research, and that's at least 50% of young adults and children worry constantly about what other people think of them. Yeah. You see them on the car park at the test centre. Oh my gosh, he's looking at me. Or, oh, I'm holding that Audi up. Or this BM or whatever. He's really mad at me. They constantly worry. And if we don't do something to combat this, it's just going to get worse, because they've got the vicious circle of the theory test running out. They've got the anxiety, social anxiety disorders and whatever as well. On top of that, the test waiting time, so the pressure is even greater to pass. So as you say, it's just an accumulation. Yeah. Sounds like doom and gloom. There's an answer. Come to the workshop. Enjoy yourself. Yeah.
But from all of that you've just said about that, they worry about what other people think of them. For everything that you put into the workshop, as I've said to you before, the one thing that absolutely struck at home with me was Chris saying, whatever anybody else thinks about you is none of your business.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and this bit about that 17 or 18, it's the first thing they've really done for themselves. I will very often bring that up with them in a positive way. So, you know, look at this, you're actually doing this for yourself. You know, how good is that? probably for the first time for a lot of them. As you say, it is very much the chance to really show what they can do on their own.
Yes, absolutely.
Trying to pick it up.
Yeah, and as well during the workshop, I mean, Chris does his talk. I mean, bear in mind, I'm the ADI who's become a therapist. Chris is a child psychotherapist who's become the driving instructor. So there's about an hour session that Chris does in the workshop, and you can see people's jaws drop and the silence, you can hear a pin drop in the room because they're hanging off his every word. And when we were putting this section together, we called it understanding snowflake syndrome. Yeah. And we use that word because it's derogatory and it's emotive and it's a bloody horrible word to use. But that's what people are calling this generation that we're teaching. Oh, bloody snowflakes, can't do anything for themselves. Mum and dad have to pick up the phone and book the lessons. But why? Yeah. They are only the product of their parents and their parents and their parents. So during lockdowns, Chris spent 2 years, and he loves his research and everything. He goes into Chris world, he just goes blank. You know, he's so focused on this. And he's been studying what's been happening to our children. Why this phrase snowflake? Why is it that it feels like they can't think for themselves? I mean, not all of them, but lots of them can't do stuff for themselves. Why is it that mum and dad have to book their lessons for them? And, you know, the outcome is quite sad. It's quite shocking. And it's up to us to not berate them, but to understand why they behave like that and put strategies in place to help them. And that's why Chris sometimes is in tears when he does this talk, because he sees where this is heading.
Yeah.
And unless there's some interventions by people like us and people listening to this or coming to the workshops and understanding what's going off, it's going to get worse.
Yeah. And there's one thing that is totally out of our control is I don't think we're helped by the fact that we have a fault-based system with the tests. I'm sure I was guilty of this. I know I was, that just always looking, what is my trainer going to get wrong? What's not going to be right? What fault are they going to put in? And I had a classic example just last week, and I won't say the name of the PDA because she's doing really well. But we were coming back down towards where we're due to finish the session, and this girl was driving really well. The road goes from one lane to two, and the extra lane appears on the left, and she looks in her left mirror and moves the car over beautifully. And we come a bit further down the road, we go back to one lane, it goes, and then goes to two again. Another look in the left mirror, points the car, doesn't need a signal because she does everything so early. We come down to a roundabout where we're taking the second exit on the left, and the girl's actually saying on the way down there, oh, I don't need to signal yet, do I? And then signals perfectly as she goes past the first exit. And there was and also it's a downhill, and she gets the car down to 40 mile an hour, and it's a graveyard for people because they relax on test, get to 40, and then they're back on the gas and they're back at 45. But she kept it at 40. So there were four things that happened down there. And at the end, I said, what about all four of these? Was this good? And the PDI said yes to every one of them. And I said,
why didn't you tell her?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's build them up. You know, all right, they've got this fault-based system, which another girl passed second time a little while ago. She did the big learner relay with me. We left home, bearing in mind this is November, 6:30 in the morning. She lives in the next village from me. She's moaning like hell, whinging away at 6:30. I said, well, you volunteered to do this. we drove on the A38, went over the hill by Exeter Racecourse in the worst rain I can remember. I was frightened. And she just dealt with it. No, and yep. She then drove six legs of the relay all the way back to Axminster.
Wow.
I said to her, do you want me to drive back now? Well, no, I was going to drive back. She actually went and got in the driving seat. There's no way I was going to be driving. She failed a test a few weeks later. And I just thought to myself, by golly, no, that girl has driven beautifully. There was a hiccup or two, but nothing that was of any big consequence. And I just that the hiccup would have been the end of it on a test, and it was on the first test she did. But one day it's got to change. But
it has. I remember, I mean, you're talking 20 odd years ago when Helen Vary trained me, and I always remember her saying, you know, instructors are known for pulling a learner over to the side to deal with a fault. Now, just like I'm teaching my Rottweiler, who's 18 months old, certain boundaries and things and what she can and can't do, she learns, and so do children, and so do learners. So they have it in their head that, oh, I'm going to get a bit of a bollocking when I get pulled over.
Yeah.
So having taught me from the very start, why not pull them over occasionally and say, just want to say, well done for this, this, and this. And that always stuck with me. And, you know, I'm a great believer in, I love the reflective logs, and we use Total Drive. So Ross and Tom, Total Drive.
Me too as well.
I didn't know that. So there we go.
Yeah.
And I changed the standard one and put all my own wording in and changed the templates and everything.
Yeah, we've done that.
It was brilliant. And you would get learners, you would say to them, even before that, what are you happy with today? And they'll tell you every time that they stall.
Yes,
didn't ask you that.
That's right. Yep.
They won't tell you the 10 times that they moved off without stalling. They all focus on the negative. So, you know, it is up to us to encourage the positive. Yeah, and they will beat themselves up. And a lovely phrase, I can't even remember who I pitched this from, but I pitched it from somebody I'd heard once, which is, okay, you've just stalled, you've just made this mistake. Do you want to use this mistake to learn from or to beat yourself up over? Your choice.
Yeah.
Beat yourself up if you want, or do you want to learn from it?
Yeah.
And there's this kind of look of shock on the face. And I think it's a very British thing, isn't it?
To
kind of focus on this negative.
Yeah.
I think that's very true. And it's a fault-based system. Yeah.
And I find that PDI finds it very difficult to the learner will do exactly what you say. Tell me what you got right. As you say, I stalled back there. And the learner will then find it difficult to think of anything good. I'll say to my PDIs, I say to myself, it doesn't matter how small it is, the good thing. So I'll say to them, what have your gear changes been like today? What was your speed like on the dual carriageway? Were we up to speed? What was your overtaking like? Oh, yeah, that was all right. That was all right.
Yeah.
How many times did you stall out of the 10 times that we stopped at traffic lights? And it's probably once or twice.
Yeah.
So 80-90% of it you've got right. But
yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're not talking so much about coaching this evening, because we don't do much on that side. What we do, but our focus is mainly on the nerves. But you know, we'll do, you know, what went well, what didn't go so well, what would you do next time, what'll happen if you don't change what you did, blah blah, what. But we teach on the course the six or seven what's of emotion. So, you know, the what went well, how did you feel, what? And so that's in the course as well and in the resources. But it's really good because it then gets people to focus not just on the physical, but how they felt doing something. Yeah. Now, I know not every instructor will teach MSPSL and will have different views on it. But if you've got a learner coming down to a junction and you're talking about roles and responsibilities, and then afterwards you discuss, okay, then, and they're having a real down on themselves. Well, did you check your mirrors? Yeah. Did you signal the correct place? Yes. Were you in the correct position? Yeah. Was your speed and gear change appropriate for the situation? Yeah. Did you look? Did you see it safe? Did you go when it was appropriate? Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So which bit aren't you happy with? So that's great in a coaching role, but what about in an emotional role? So what did you feel on approach. Oh, well, it's okay, I was coming down to it. So what about when you were getting in the position and slowing down? Oh, I started to feel a bit apprehensive then. So what about when we actually got to the roundabout and instead of going, you stopped? Ah, right, well, what was happening there? Ah, so my mind went blank. I wasn't sure what I was meant to be doing. And then I started to panic. So then what you're doing is you're opening up this whole emotional reasoning behind their actions as well. And I think it's very easy as an instructor to, as you say, spot what they've done wrong with them. But a lot of the time it's the why behind it, yeah. Not what happened, but why did it happen?
I know that that this emotion side of it can be quite tricky. So I well remember Penny and I did the BTEC 4 with Tri Coaching. That may not be the most appropriate company to be mentioning at the moment, but hey ho, you know. Fantastic. You know, but I remember they talked about the scaling. And I get PDIs, I've got to use scaling. One of them actually used it at the end of the session rather than at the beginning as well. And I ask them where they've got this from. It's usually from Lou. But you know, but they haven't listened properly to what she said about it. That's the issue. But one of the things on the Tri Coaching, it was what's your score? What would you score yourself at the start of this? What do you want to get? Why? What do you want to get to? What help can I give you? And I know Penny really struggled, and I'd sort of glossed it over a lot. And at the end of the final question they use is, how will you feel when you've got done this? I know Penny found that very difficult to work out. Well, what's the point of it? But you know,
and that's probably the most relevant bit of all.
Yes,
because you might have done it all in order and got a 10 out of 10 and done the mirrors, the signal, the position, everything right, judged the roundabout properly, done everything perfectly, but inside be absolutely terrified. But if you don't ask, how did it feel? So we scale. You can, so if you want to use scaling, well, one thing Chris always says with scaling as well is, what does that 7 look like to you though? Because, oh, I want to be a 7. Well, what would be a 7? Because a 7 to 1 could be a 9 for somebody else or a 3 for somebody else. But we can do it with emotions as well. Yeah. So emotions on approach on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is you're pretty happy and chilled, 5 is slightly anxious, 10 is you're going to just jump out the car and you'd rather be at the dentist having dental work with no anaesthetic kind of thing. How bad is it? Oh, okay, coming down the road at 30, I'm on a 1 or a 2, I'm fine. As I approach, I can feel that knot in my tummy, so it's going up to a 5. But, oh, just when I got there, my mind just went. I didn't know what I was doing. I just, everything went out the window. My heart was racing. I was just like a 9 out of 10 on my emotions. I just couldn't see straight. I couldn't process. Okay, so now let's deal with the emotion.
Yeah.
So yeah, we scale it. And it's psychologically, it's called a SUD, which is a subjective unit of distress. And the reason it's subjective is everybody would score it differently. Yes. And the same when you scale, scaling is subjective because you can't be objective about scaling, can you? Because it's their own subjective.
Yes, and you can't react to what they say. You just sort of, okay. Give me your reasons, you know, and give me your reasons. I'm not going to give you mine. I said to them, you can't, whatever you do, don't say, oh, I would have given you such and such, you know, because it's nothing to do with you.
Yeah, that's why it's subjective.
Yeah.
We don't call it subjective scaling, but in terms of emotional, it's subjective units of distress. So a little point for, if we are on the coaching side, is think of it as a subjective scale, as you say. They're not objectifying it, they're subjective. It's their own subjective view, not your view.
If you just saw me grimace then, I just got cramp in my leg. I'm just stretching it out now under the table.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does it hurt? How does that make you feel?
We're bloody awful. I just cope. And look, we've gone through so much stuff here and probably only scratched the surface of a lot of it. So I think the best thing to do is to bring this to an end fairly soon now, and just say to people, look out for when the courses are on, and come and join us.
Absolutely. We'll put the links up to the tappy hand dance to stop your pupils muddling up left and right. I'll put one generic link up to Test Buddy Instructor, so it's got details of what a one-to-one session with myself or Chris, Driving Test Nurse Pro, the new Mental Health Pro, which is totally free to help you identify behaviours, emotions, sensations and thoughts for your learners. That's free for you and your learners, and of course the workshops. If there isn't a workshop in the area that you're interested in, just contact me, drop me a message on Facebook or on the form, and we'll see if we can get one arranged. And we're really looking forward. October the 5th and 6th, isn't it?
That's 5th in Exeter and 6th in Falmouth.
So really looking forward to it.
Yeah, so am I. See you then. I'm looking forward to sorting something out also with Chris. Will I have the same background then, or will he be in his office when I do his session?
Oh no, this is just in the dining room. One of these posh Zoom backgrounds. what did you want to say? This is me. So either in the office or here. The only reason I'm in the dining room is Chris has got a therapy client. Well, no, I think that's actually somebody for her part three at the moment. He's looking out.
I haven't got bored in any of this at all, but there's plenty to look at in the background on that wall as well.
I wanted to make the dining room a little bit different. So these are stickers off Amazon that I've got all over the wall that look like the old American metal sort of stickers, like advertising beer and hamburgers and all
it
of that.
It looks very impressive. It's a shame this is an audio recording.
Well, I was just saying, we're just giving all that, and then I realised that we're on a podcast, so people are now going to have to come to a Zoom meeting as well, aren't they, and see what this is like. Oh, just to let you know very briefly, after the workshops, we also have a load of resources, the 2-Minute Techniques Guide, workshop manuals, everything's downloadable on the new Test Buddy app. And we do free regular Zoom sessions after the workshop. So when we do a workshop the following week, usually the Thursday evening, we're on Zoom for at least a couple of hours, explaining to people how to use the resources, how to start to put these things into practice. But they're literally techniques that you can finish the workshop at half five, have a lesson at 6, and start to use them straight away.
Yeah, I've got the ABC techniques. I printed them off and laminated them, so I've got them in car just sort of.
It's a quick just reminder.
As a reference there, when I needed it to start with. But once you've been using them a fair bit, it's like anything else. You just go into it.
Yeah, you just get used to it.
Diane, thank you so much for giving up your time tonight. It's been absolutely superb. And I know that we've already got several people lined up. There's five of us from our driving school are going to be coming to Exeter anyway. Hopefully, I'm sure there'll be lots more there, and look forward to seeing you then.
Do, and all of the instructors get put on our website as driving test nurse specialists as well, so you can all have that logo on your websites as well, on your Facebook pages or whatever. So we're really looking forward to it.
Lovely. Thanks ever so much, Diane, and see you soon.
See you soon. Take care, Kev.